Thanks for joining us, and welcome to the Stonebridge Church Podcast. Here at Stonebridge, our goal is to lead people into a real, healthy, and growing relationship with Jesus Christ. If you'd like to join us live, we hold services every Sunday at 9:30 and 11:05 a.m. at 1 Stonebridge Church Drive in the Woodlands, Texas. We invite you to check out our website at gostonebridge.com and follow us on Twitter, where our handle is at SBChurch, and give us a like on Facebook at facebook.com/gostonebridge. This week, Pastor Steve Bradley teaches from our new series, Satisfied. Here's Pastor Steve.
Good morning. I am impressed. I mean, daylight savings time, you had to turn your clocks up, and you're here. Just to let you know, I would not be here if I didn't have to be at this, you know, early hour. And I am impressed that you're here. And I hope that you'll come away and say, you know, I'm really glad that I came. I don't like to say this. I don't like when people say this. This is the most important message you will ever hear. But, oh no, I'm not going to say it. Okay, but it might be. You never know. You know, the bumper, the video, points out one of the things that is a tragedy for a lot of people, and that is if you just live in fear and you live in confusion and you never take a shot at, you know, at doing something and the thing that you were made for and the thing that you were intended to do and the thing that God, you know, prepared your life for. And the last 2 weeks we've been dealing with that as we were looking at the life of Gideon from the Old Testament, the book of Judges, and it is a tragedy. And it's one of those things that a lot of people regret. But there's a second thing that is a tragedy also. And that is when you go for it and you try and you give your best and you work and work and work and you give everything you have only to not ever get there, right? A lot of people think, man, you know, I gave so much. I tried so hard. I went after my goal. I thought this is, you know, what I should do and what I should pursue. And I thought this is how God was leading me and directing me. I just to let you know, I have to deal with a lot of people on that subject. They come in, this is what God has said. Why isn't it working out? And, you know, and I mean, that's a difficult thing. We're not going to deal with that one today, next week. But then there's a third one, which may be even more tragic that we're going to deal with. And that is when you go for it, you give your best, you try, you reach for it, you do everything you can, and you get there. Only to find out it didn't really satisfy. It didn't really bring, you know, what I was hoping that it would bring. And that's why this morning we're talking about when life doesn't meet your expectations. When all of a sudden, you know, you had these expectations on what would happen and if I did this and if I got there, what I would feel. And we've all done this. We've felt it. And then that feeling just sort of went away, right? You know, we weren't able to hold on to it or to keep it. And we think, what is going on? Have I been tricked? Did somebody, you know, deceive me because I thought this was going to do it? Thought I was going to finally arrive? I love commercials, I have to tell you, because, you know, in a quick 30 seconds, actually only about 22, you know, the message goes through. And I did you see the one with Troy Aikman in it? And Troy Aikman goes into a little dinky kind of 7-Eleven, I guess, you know, gas station, little convenience store or something, walks in, and somebody recognizes him. There's a guy at the counter, and then somebody in there recognizes, Troy Aikman, Super Bowl, and goes over there, and Troy says, you've seen it? Troy says, I don't dwell in the past, right? And we're all going, yeah, right, you know, so, you know, I don't dwell in the past. And he goes up to pay, and his phone goes off, and his ringtone or whatever on his phone is a audio of him throwing a touchdown pass in the Super Bowl and being, you know, the great, and everybody going, Troy Aikman, all that. And he's sitting there as it goes off and looks over and says, okay, I dwell in the past. And the two guys go, well, I would too. Yeah, I mean, and he's like, okay, cool, and walks out. But it kind of hits on that issue that we all have in life, that the problems with getting there and the things that we think are going to make us satisfied or going to make us feel good about it, those things quickly go away. In fact, you know, the world, this is just the way that the world works. Great, you did it, you accomplished, you went, and then they move on to the next one because the next person wants to be the one that accomplishes and gets there. So not only do they not care that you got there, but a lot of times, you know, they want to downplay what you did, even though, you know, in public, a lot of times they go, oh, it was so wonderful to have you around, but it really wasn't. And, you know, that's just the kind of the way it works. Maybe if you're a parent, you feel that way, right? It's always been my contention with being a parent, you know. You know, you slave for your kids, you give them everything they need, you go through all their heartbreaks, their emotional dramas in life and everything. You get them there only for them to say, out of here, you know. And you're like, wait a minute, what is the deal? That's my reward. You're leaving, you're going somewhere. But of course, I realized that, you know, that's exactly what happened to my parents also. In fact, it's one of my favorite stories. When I went off to college, my parents, you know, would be there. You pack up, you're driving off. And parents, do not do this. I do not do this. Well, I do. But you're not supposed to do this. And we're driving off. My mom and dad are in the driveway going, you know, and you can drive off and you feel so bad. You know, they're still just, you know, and you come back from college 3 months later and they're still in the driveway, right? You know, and you think your life's not over. And I mean, I hope it's not. I feel bad that I feel like, you know, right? Because we're looking for something. And unfortunately, one of the struggles is in this world, we just don't find the satisfaction that we're looking for. It just doesn't satisfy. And if our expectations are that it will, then we find ourselves in a very difficult place. So I want to take you to another book in the Old Testament written by a guy named Solomon. It's called Ecclesiastes. If you have a Bible with you, you can open up almost directly in the middle of the Bible, if it's Old Testament and New Testament. You open it up. If you open it up and you see the Psalms, you got to go right a little bit more. If you see Isaiah and Jeremiah, you went too far right, go left a little bit more, and you'll find this book called Ecclesiastes. Solomon's name, just to let you know, is never mentioned in the book, but he does mention that he calls himself the preacher, the one who gathers the assembly to speak to them and to give them wisdom and to help them get through things. He calls himself a son of David, and also he is one of the kings in Jerusalem. So most historic scholars would say this is written by Solomon. It certainly seems to match up with a lot of the things that he says in there, and a lot of people misunderstand the book. Because it sounds like just a negative, down, I'm critical of life, sour, just, you know, pessimistic. Actually, listen, it's not. That's not. The book, what he does is he is dividing out the things that matter, the things that last, with the things that don't. And there's so much of that pessimism or negativeness in there because the things that don't, Solomon has to struggle with those things just like we do, and thinking they would satisfy me, and then those things, you know, don't satisfy me. Here's an exercise for you as you get into this with Solomon. What if you had everything you wanted? I mean, you had so much wealth and so much riches. You had, you know, you were known everywhere you go, people would know who you are. You know, you prestige, a position, people would jump, you know, to your every, you know, call and beckoning. What if you were a person who is known as being so wise? And, you know, just so you knew everything, could make every decision, and you could run for president, then you, okay, I'm not doing that. And, you know, if you were just that way, right? You were, you know, you had it all. What would you do? How would you find satisfaction? What would you go after and say, this is it? See, this is Solomon in his day. This is sort of who he was. I mean, he is known. He is wise. The things that he accomplished are amazing. He is wealthy. You know, there are people that when he spoke, I mean, everyone would stop and listen to what he said. And yet Solomon, when he goes into and starts talking about life, we should listen because he's going to help us understand what satisfies and what does not satisfy in life. So here, look at with me, and this is chapter 1. This is how he begins in the first chapter after he says who he is. He says this, everything is meaningless. And you're like, great, thank you. I thought you said the book wasn't pessimistic. And, you know, now he's going to clarify a little bit by saying it again. Says the teacher, completely meaningless. And then he goes on and says this, what do people get for all their hard work? Catch this, here's the key, under the sun. That means in this life, in this world, as we see it and understand life, whether you are Christian, not Christian, religious, not as you understand it. And this was important for Solomon to write these things because in his world and in his day, Israel, because they'd become very prominent, you know, as far as Israel ever got after, you know, Solomon comes after David, after, and he comes after Saul. And all of a sudden, things are going their way. It's really worked out well. Solomon, big time of peace. And because of that, just like in our day, I think, Israel had become very much more secular. In other words, when you become secular, what you do is you start looking for your satisfaction not from God himself, but from what? Yeah, this life and this world. And there, of course, you got to think about it for a minute. There might be a problem with that because this world is temporary. This world doesn't last. And just like I said, the accomplishments and the things you get, you know, today, they won't matter tomorrow. No one will care tomorrow. So he's hitting on that. And he says in the next verse, he says, generations come and generations go, but the earth never changes. He's saying, listen, it's always been this way. It's always going to be this way. The sun rises, the sun sets. Then it hurries around to rise again. The wind blows south and blows north. Around and around it goes. Probably should have been where it stops. No one knows. But he says, just blowing in circles. I mean, it just goes on and on and on, and nothing ever changes. And then he says this, rivers run into the sea. I like this. Rivers run into the sea, and the sea is, say this with me, the sea is never full. It just never satisfies. No matter how much you get, no matter how much you chase, it just never satisfies. And I hope that there are some people in here, even this morning, they're going, you know, you're right. That's part of my problem. I'm still thinking it's finally going to satisfy just that next promotion or the next, you know, paycheck, or I finally win the lottery, or I finally am recognized for my, that's going to do it. I'm finally going to find what I'm looking for. But he's comparing it to like the ocean. He says, listen, no matter how much runs in, no matter how much you get, it just doesn't ever fill us up. It doesn't bring satisfaction. Then he says, then the water returns again to the rivers and flows again out to sea. In other words, you know, then somebody else gets the next recognition. He says, everything is wearisome and beyond description. In other words, I'm tired of trying to figure it out. No matter how much we see, we are, say this with me, we are not in a lasting way. He says, no matter how much we hear, we are not content. Right. So here's what he's saying. Or the sort of the premise of his book, because I'm going to do the entire book of Ecclesiastes, 12 chapters, pretty long, and don't have much time left, so you got to hang on. This is his contention, or what he says. Without God, nothing in life has real lasting value. Without God, nothing in life has real lasting meaning. It doesn't bring real lasting value. Satisfaction. Now, again, Solomon is not doing this, even though it's going to come across this way, to bring you down or to be negative and pessimistic, even though in one sense he is, so that you would not, you know, make the mistake of that everyone makes of thinking that's going to satisfy when it's not going to satisfy. In fact, Solomon talks about satisfaction in this as being a gift from God. That's an interesting way to put it, isn't it? It's a gift from God. And we won't go over that this morning, but there are three things in here that he says that are part of that. It's a gift from God to those who seek to please him. It's a gift from God to those who fear him. And those two we'll actually see in these verses. And then the third thing is it's a gift from God to those who recognize that he ultimately is going to be, he will be, the judge of what we do with our life, of our deeds. And he says the person who understands that, who says, you know, life's really about pleasing God, it's really about fearing God, and God understanding that at some point, God will judge what did we do with our life, what did you do with what I gave you, that person does find satisfaction in life that everyone else misses. That last point's in the next to the last chapter of Solomon where he does that. So here's what Solomon says brings the kind of efforts that do bring some value. He's not saying they're in value in life and they're in value in what you do. He's going to acknowledge that. In fact, let me throw out real quickly. First of all, he says there's value in our work and our labor. He says there is. It's just not going to bring lasting satisfaction. But you should work and you should labor. You were made for this. In chapter 2, he says this, anything I wanted, this is Solomon speaking, anything I wanted, he said, I would take. I denied myself no pleasure. Now, a lot of people go after this and saying, well, he's just a hedonist. It's not what he means. He's saying, I went after life. I gave it my best. I tried. I decided. And these things brought pleasure. And he goes on to add, he says, I even found great pleasure in, say it with me, I even found great pleasure in what? Hard work, yeah. I realize this is good stuff. This is what God made me for. He says, a reward for all my labors. The satisfaction that I got out of working hard, he said, it was a valuable thing. I understand that. It was an important thing for me to catch. Second thing is, he says, I found satisfaction in this life out of skill, or our skills that we have, and wisdom. And I'm going to correlate those two together. The reason is because that's what Solomon does. When he talks about being wise and wisdom in this life, he's talking about becoming skillful at the same time. So you have natural gifts. You know, God made you a certain way, right? And God gave you with the ability to do certain things. You know, March Madness is on, so you watch these guys that are, you know, 18 and 19 years old, who can literally just fly through the air with the greatest of ease, and I mean, you know, do things you're like, wow. But what we don't realize, or sometimes we don't, is they not only had, you know, God-given ability and gifts, but they also had to work really hard and work the right way. There was a wisdom involved in learning how to develop their skills and their abilities. Does that make sense? That's what you do in life. In fact, spiritually, it's the same way. Wisdom comes because you have learned how to understand life, what life is all about, and how to apply it. It's a big, big deal. So he ties the two together, and that will make sense when you look at this verse in chapter 10 of Ecclesiastes. He says, if the axe is dull and he does not sharpen its edge, then he must exert more what? You just got to work harder. Because you weren't very wise, you weren't very skillful, you didn't figure out how this works. He says wisdom has the advantage of giving, I like this, wisdom gives what? Success, yeah. Wisdom has the advantage of giving success. You build skill, you build ability in your job, in your profession. You know, people come up with technology that says this makes it faster and easier, and it's absolutely a part of life. I worked when I was a young boy. My dad believed in the work ethic, which I'm glad that he did. And so his rule was by 12, you had to have a job, and he would get you one. And so, you know, he put us to work also. Well, my brother was 3 years older than I was. He'd been working for a year. I pretty much caught him by the time I was about 10 in size. So he decided that trumps age, you're going to work. And it was really good because I got to work with a man named Sam Sheriff. We just call him Mr. Sam. And as he would say, Mr. Sam has wisdom and skill that people can't learn in school. And it just meant practically how to do things, practically how to understand people. And I still carry a lot of lessons from Mr. Sam. It was Mr. Sam, as young boys, that taught us, listen, you've got to judge the character of the person that you're working with and understand, are they honest? Are they truthful? So while we're working and we're digging post holes, because it was just manual labor, you know, out in the sun and dying out there, you know, he would school us on these lessons, you know, in life. And I learned a lot of things from him. One of the things I learned at the end of the day, we're ready to go home, pack it up, throw everything in the truck. He's like, nope, got to clean up the tools. Clean the tools, you know. Somebody else can do that. Or, you know, we'll worry about that tomorrow. Nope, going to do it today, you know, before we go on our way back, you know. And so we would take his axe. He had an axe he called Big Mama. No one was allowed to touch it. It was his. So, and he sharpened that thing all the time because he would say, it's never wasted effort to be sharpening your axe. Because he knew, you know, when he used it, the job was a lot easier. He was just smarter. We would sharpen post hole diggers because as they cut through the clay, they worked better when they were clean and they were sharp. And he knew that effort was not wasted effort. You put the effort into it. It's wisdom. It's skill that you learn how to operate in life. And Solomon says, it's a good thing. You should learn how to do this. He also says, there is an effort in our righteousness that matters in life too, and is a good thing. This is in the eighth chapter, a little further back in the book. He says this, even though a person sins and gets by with it 100 times, this is what we notice in life, throughout a long life, I'm still convinced that the good life is reserved for the person who fears God, who lives reverently in his presence, and that the evil person will not experience a good life. No matter how many days he lives, they'll all be as flat and colorless as a shadow because he does not fear God. And this this idea of a shadow comes from actually the same word when he says meaningless, no lasting value. It's actually the same word. It could be translated a puff of smoke or just a vapor or a cloud also. It means something that appears to have substance to it or meaning to it, but when you try to grab it and hold on to it, it goes away. You know, it's just not something that will last. And he says the same is true of our righteousness. Even though in the book he laments, he goes over a lot about how, you know, there's a lot of people that do the right thing and it doesn't work out, you know, the way they thought it was going to work out. God, I did what you told me to do, and I thought by that then you were going to make this happen, and God doesn't do that. And he says, you know, I've realized even in our righteousness, when we think our righteousness will be our satisfaction in life, he says, doesn't work out that way. Not at all. God has his own plans, and those plans involved us finding our satisfaction in something other than our effort, even though, like I said, he says, there is some satisfaction in that effort. So here are three haunting questions. There are a lot of them in here, but three major haunting questions that Solomon poses in this book that I want you to think about. I want you to consider, because I think these would help if you really grasp these and held on to these as you live your life and you go through life. And there are things that Solomon brings up. The first one is this: can wrong motives sour our satisfaction? In other words, even though we do the right thing, even though we work on the good things in life, are the motives that we have, he goes into a lot of things too, can our sins do this also, but could our motives actually cause the satisfaction that we're longing for to lose its flavor and lose its taste for us? This is what he says in the fourth chapter. He says, then I observed all the work and ambition motivated by envy. Some translations will say by jealousy. And he said, what a waste. In other words, what a puff of smoke. It's, you know, we think, but I'm accomplishing, I'm getting there, even though I may be motivated by being jealous and envious and all that. He says, but here's the problem. It doesn't bring any really real satisfaction. In fact, it makes what should be satisfying taste bitter and sour in our life. Because again, it's just never enough. Because our envy and jealousy is like the ocean. It just never fills up. Not to the point that we finally say, it's enough. I'm satisfied. Or look a few verses later in that same chapter, he says this, I turned my head and saw yet another wisp of smoke. Now you know what that means, right? On its way to nothingness. A solitary person, completely alone, no children, no family, no friends, not working obsessive... yet working obsessively late into the night, compulsively greedy for more and more, never bothering to ask this question, which they should be asking. Why am I working like a dog, never having any fun? And who cares? And he's just saying, you know, at some point you stop and say, why am I doing all of this? Just so because I envy what other people have? Just because I'm jealous of what they have? And what satisfaction will that bring if it's not something that I can work on and then pass on to someone else, you know? Make sense? Yeah, it's something that we should consider in life. And unfortunately, when people consider something like this, you know, later in life, sometimes it's way too late when they do. I've often met with men who have lost and given up, knowing this was part of the sacrifice, their marriage, their family, their friends, their church family, their relationship to God, to pursue success, money, fame, fortune, only to come up at the end of the life and say, why did I do it? You know, for what? It's, again, just like a puff of smoke that just fades off into nothingness. They have nothing to grasp, and they say, but the problem is you can't go back and fix it. I mean, you can decide then to say, I'm not going to live that way. But there's no way that you can go back and change it or fix it. I had a man, Christian man, was a friend. And this was the story of his life. And a great testimony, but very, 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 very over-the-top successful. But he was willing to sacrifice not only his marriage, but his kids. And I remember getting a letter from his daughter and her family, and their families were very good and very strong, and about their grandchildren, saying that we just cannot allow him to see the grandkids, period. They never had anything to do with him and would not allow him to see. And they said for one reason, he's never had anything to do with us, ever. And I think, what a sad thing. In fact, I told him, what a sad thing. But he would justify it, you know. And he would justify it, honestly, let me help you here, justify it by saying, I'm right, they're wrong. Okay. And so everything that matters is gone, but you can stand there and say, I'm right, they're wrong. And at the end of his life, tragic story, sad story, because he was lonely, empty, had nothing, and unfortunately, even the last time I talked to him, still would not admit that he'd made a mistake in life. So, okay, I brought it down to a nice low here. Here we go, number two. Another haunting question, but this is Solomon. Just saying, hey, I've looked out there. I know these things, you know, may not be, you know, feel-good type stuff, but they're serious stuff that we should take a look at. It's number two. He says, one of the haunting questions is, who will inherit the fruit of our labors? And it kind of plays off of this one, but he goes a little bit further than that in saying, you know, where does it go? Who ends up with him? This is what he says in the second chapter. It's a little lengthy. This is what he says. I came to hate all my hard work here on earth, for I must leave to others everything I've earned. And who can tell whether my successors will be wise or foolish? In other words, you say, well, I'm only going to leave it to the wise. Well, maybe, maybe not. He says, yet they will control everything I've gained by my skill and hard work under the sun in this life. Again, he is saying, how meaningless. So I gave up in despair, questioning the value of all my hard work in this world. In other words, that's what makes you stop and say, why do it? I'm just not doing it because you're looking for something, you know, that is not going to bring satisfaction. He says in the next verse, some people work wisely with knowledge and skill, then must leave the fruit of their efforts to someone who hasn't worked for it. This too is meaningless, a great tragedy. So what do people get in this life for all their hard work and anxiety? Their days of labor are filled with pain and grief. Even at night, their minds cannot rest. In other words, and they can't sleep at night. Anybody want to amen it? Yeah, that's right. You know, hey. And what Solomon is saying, yeah, it's a good question to ask. Because it points to, what do we expect? What are we looking for? How do we think it works? Because Solomon's, you know, answer to this is, listen, this isn't your call. You just have to trust God, and that God is a just God, and that, you know, even though you may work, and then someone that really undeserving and is, you know, wicked and may inherit it, it's not over. But if you think that's the way it works, and you think somehow you can control it, and that you're going to find great satisfaction in your ability to say who, then you're probably going to wake up, you know, one day, or maybe you'll be waking up all night long worrying about it, because it just doesn't bring any satisfaction at all in life. Here's the third question he asks. Can wisdom promise more than just this life? And I think it's a good question, because humanly, our struggle is to think, I've become wise, I've become skillful, there somehow that's going to take me even beyond this life on my own merit, on my own wisdom, my own skill, maybe my own righteousness, by my own merit, it's going to take me beyond that. And look at how Solomon even deals with this issue in chapter number 2 again. He says, a wise person uses the eyes in his head, but a fool walks in darkness. He's saying they just figure things out. But he said, I've also come to realize that the same destiny waits for both of them. I thought to myself, if the destiny that waits for the fool waits for me as well, then what is the advantage of, say it with me, yeah, of the skill I've developed, of the wisdom that I have? So what's the advantage if we both end up in the same place? Now understand again, what Solomon is doing, he's looking at it from a secular view, from the view, you know, without God and understanding who God is, just from our effort and how. So, and the reason I say that is because you may have been a Christian all your life, grown up in church and all, you may still look at life this way. And you may still struggle with finding real satisfaction in life because you look at it this way. And the problem is not God or what God has done, what God said. The problem is us. That somehow we expect God, I'm going to look at it this way from a worldly view because this is the world that I live in, even though I know who you are and I believe in you. I'm going to look at it from a worldly view, and what I expect, God, is for somehow you to make the worldly part of my view because I'm a Christian work out where it doesn't work out for everybody else. It doesn't work that way. But that would go against everything that God actually says about how it does work. That really our satisfaction doesn't come from this world. And part of the reason that you and I live in this world the way we live in this world and we don't find satisfaction is so that we would recognize that. Not so that we wouldn't work. Not so that we wouldn't, you know, pursue righteousness and wisdom and skill. And we wouldn't, you know, go after hard labor and say, you know what, it has its own rewards. They're temporary, but it has its own rewards. But so that in doing that, we would also recognize that our real satisfaction, it has to come from a different place. And so one answer kind of permeates the whole book for Solomon. And this is one of the places that you find this answer is at the end of the second chapter. This is what he says. He says, the best that people can do is eat, drink, and enjoy their work. This is not about partying, sorry. This is just, hey, the best you can do is live this life, be thankful for this life, what you have, you know, no matter how much, how little, do your work. He said, that's from the secular side, from the under the sun part, this is how it works. He said, I saw that even this comes from who? Yeah, even God has planned it this way because no one can eat or enjoy life without him. It's a gift from God. If people please God, God will give them wisdom, knowledge, and one more thing, yeah. But sinners will get only the work of gathering and storing wealth that they will have to give to the ones who please God. So all their work is useless. It's like chasing after the wind. So, you know, here's Solomon's conclusion is that, you know, when you really understand who God is and you begin to get a grasp on it's about, you know, what God has done and the fact that God, you know, calls me to himself and he calls me into a different kingdom, a different world than this world. I don't know if you realize that's what the gospel means, that there's a new kingdom. There's a new ruler, that there's something more than this life. That's what good, because every time a new king would take over a land and conquer, they would send messengers and they would come and they would proclaim a new good news. That's where we get the word gospel from. They would make a proclamation that all the rules had changed, all the sense of where you think you're going to find satisfaction and meaning have changed because a new ruler has come. That's the gospel. There's a new ruler, God himself. Christ has come, and as we put our hope and our trust in him, we do find, you know, the satisfaction that we're looking for. Not necessarily in all the everyday things of life, that satisfaction is still temporary, but our expectations have changed to where we think we're going to find it and where it's going to come from. Pray with me this morning. Dear Heavenly Father, we have to admit that we struggle, that we have a tendency to be like the world around us, not in ways that sometimes that are offensive to you, but then again, sometimes in ways that really don't show you how we see you or how we should see you or understand you, that you're the one that brings satisfaction. And that our greatest contentment and joy, our greatest hope, our expectations about the future, what's going to happen, that we're going to find the things we're really looking for, that we need to realize that they're not wrapped up in this life and in this world, but instead they're wrapped up in you and who you are. And that your son Jesus came into this world, was willing to take on the worst of this world, suffering that this world dealt out to him because he didn't live for this world, but instead became the rescuer of those of us who are looking for a Savior, who are looking for you to come and change the way we see it, change the way we understand it, and how desperate we are for that change. This morning, if you're here and maybe even as we talk about these things, you say, well, that's me. I'm still looking for these things. Or maybe you're still holding on to stubbornly that, no, this world is finally going to deliver. It's going to make me satisfied. The good news, the gospel is that even though this world cannot bring lasting satisfaction and lasting value in our lives, there's a God who sent his Son to do exactly that, to show us a different way, to show us the way things will be one day when he calls everything into account. He straightens all the records out. And God, through his Son Christ, is the supreme ruler of all things. And Christ today offers that rescue, a different life, a different approach. As Solomon would say, a different satisfaction coming from who God is, living the life that he has given me, working hard, gaining wisdom, trying to live my life in a way that would please him, so that God would be honored by my life as best I can, as flawed as I am, but knowing I do this because I have a rescuer, not because I can ever perform well enough for God, but because he's rescued me and called me into a different life. So if you've never opened up your heart, said, Jesus, I trust you. I believe this is what you came for. I want you to be my king. I want you to be my ruler because I know your kingdom will last forever. This morning is a great time to acknowledge that or to reaffirm that and say, this is the one that I follow. And this is the one that I trust will bring me satisfaction. As you continue to pray, as we continue in this morning, in the spirit of prayer, I want you to listen to this song.